A day of large strikes by hundreds of thousands of workers in the United Kingdom. Junior doctors, teachers, and journalists have joined other sectors. U.S. banking failure reverberates around the world with European banking stocks nosediving. Russia says its ties with the U.S. are in a lamentable state. That after Washington accused Moscow of downing one of its Air Force drones over the Black Sea this Tuesday. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to World News. Now, hundreds of thousands of workers in England have walked off their jobs in one of the biggest single days of industrial action over low wages since the wave began last year. And most people are digging deep into their pockets due to the United Kingdom's cost of living crisis. Here's what one of the striking teachers had to say.
I came to the UK thinking, oh, I'm going to go and give back and I'm going to really help people and help students and stuff. But it's just soul destroying because day in, day out, you feel depressed. The fact that you can't, you know, you're trying to help these people and you're getting paid pittance for it. You know, I'm in my overdraft at the end of every month because I haven't got enough money. I'm careful with my budgeting, but still, no matter how much you put into it, 60-hour weeks, you're still not getting enough enough pay for the job and the conditions. So.
Teachers, London Underground train drivers, doctors, nurses, lawyers, and journalists are among many other sectors that have joined in on the mass stoppage. They're all demanding higher pay and pace with the country's soaring inflation. Many sectors are also calling for better working conditions, pensions, and job security. Underground train transportation has been brought to a standstill. Many are also concerned the NHS will make those with chronic illnesses suffer. Since last summer, the UK has been plagued by strikes in different sectors. The cost of living crisis has pitted unions against the government, with Downing Street insisting that big pay hikes are unaffordable and will only fuel inflation more. And our correspondent Saeed Purza joined us earlier from London and spoke about the massive number of strikers that flocked London's Trafalgar Square.
Here we are at Trafalgar Square. This, of course, is part of that massive wave of industrial action that has swept the United Kingdom over the past few months. Today, it's kicked up another notch. It's a momentous day that has brought up to 500,000 people out. The large lion's share of that, teachers, 300,000 of them, have walked off for 48 hours, affecting millions of students and tens of thousands of schools across England. They were joined by more than 100,000 civil servants, BBC radio journalists, tube strikers or metro workers, all assembled in London's Hyde Park and marched here to Trafalgar Square. And they are united in one thing, one major demand, and that is an increase in their pay, which has been dwindling over the past decade and not keeping pace with the rate of inflation and with the ever-increasing cost of living. It's worth mentioning that the teachers, for example, in Scotland and Wales have had received deals from their respective devolved governments that have led to them canceling their strike action until further notice. But no sign of that happening, no sign of negotiations between the government here and the strikers in the different sectors just yet. Which means that we're going to see more of this in the coming weeks, months, if not longer, coming.
Professor of Economics Rodney Shakespeare has told us about the reason behind the industrial actions that are clipping the UK economy.
Whilst that extraordinary demonstration was taking place, something even more extraordinary, indeed mind-boggling, was taking place in the House of Commons. The actual reality of inflation is round about 15, 17, 18 for most people. But if they have mortgages, the effective inflation for them is at least 20%. Point number one is the government is saying, oh, well, it's only 10%. And then came the mind-boggling bit. They're then saying, oh, yes, and by the end of the year, in some magic way, it will have gone down to 3%. So you see, the government is lying about inflation. They're putting a preposterous supposed figure for inflation at the end of the year. The strikes are there now, and there's going to be an even worse strikes because the government is going to endeavor to settle foreign figures on private sector pay, sorry, public sector pay. One other point. There is no mention of one of the biggest causes of the inflation, which is the movement of the NATO military alliance to the east. That and the killing of tens of thousands of Russian Ukrainians. No mention at all. The situation is weird. It's building to a huge conflict. And the strikers, the government is going to try to face down the strikers, but I don't think it will win.
In France, millions of protesters have taken to the streets in a last-ditch effort to convince lawmakers not to back President Emmanuel Macron's highly unpopular pension reform bill.
Work is not made to enslave people. Work is also a means of emancipation. So people are taking to the streets. They are right. In any case, in France, we are vaccinated against any form of authoritarianism. There is no need to be afraid at that level, even though it's unfortunate that it's happening in such a confrontational way.
A broad alliance of unions has called for all-out demonstrations for an 8-day. The industrial actions caused disruptions to transport and energy sectors and left garbage piling on the streets of Paris. France has been mired in protests and strikes over the past several months over the contentious pension reforms. Protesters are demanding the government scrap the bill, which proposes a rise in the retirement age from 62 to 64 and makes it much harder to obtain a full pension. And despite all this backlash, President Macron's been pressing ahead with the plan, arguing the new policy will make the pension budget in the black. The Senate has already approved the bill, and there will be a parliamentary vote on the legislation on Thursday. And President of the European Institute for International Law, Mahmoud Refat, joined us earlier and spoke about the reasons a massive wave of protests are taking place across France.
Well, transparently, it's the retirement question, which is the main reason of strikes, but also these number of manifestants that are the largest since long years are showing somehow a big protest against the politics of President Macron. President Macron is a banker person, and he's somehow not, let me not employ the term capitalist, but he's applying lots of policies of the capitalist approach, which the French society doesn't approve or doesn't accept in general. It's very socialist society, has been like that for a long, long time. For centuries, a socialist society, and having a social construction inside it, depending on lots of solidarity among the organizations of the state and the members of the society. While President Macron is taking the things aside somehow and capitalizing the society and on several levels. That's why there's this, what we can call it today, social explosion, because these numbers, we did not attain it for long years. There's some syndicates talking about 3.2 million manifested the Saturday before last Saturday, which is a huge number.
European banking stocks have plummeted sharply as fallout of a collapse in American Silicon Valley Bank is reverberating through global financial markets now. Shares in the Swiss banking giant Credit Suisse hit a new record low after its biggest backer ruled out providing it with any more financial assistance. Other European banking stocks have also crashed. Shares in the UK's FTSE 100 have shed their values by around 2.5%. Financial markets remain in a volatile situation as investors are worried over the collapse of the Silicon Valley Bank last week. Shares of other American banks have also dropped over the failure of the SVB's parent company and Signature Bank in New York. Assurances by the U.S. President Joe Biden have done little to calm markets. Russia says its ties with the U.S. are in a lamentable state, that after Washington accused Moscow of downing one of its Air Force drones over the Black Sea this Tuesday. The Kremlin spokesman says bilateral ties have reached their lowest point ever. Dmitry Peskov, however, added Russia has never refused constructive dialogue. After the drone incident, Russia urged U.S. to stop what it calls hostile flights near its borders.
We assume that the United States will refrain from further speculation in the media and stop flights near Russian borders. We consider any action with the use of U.S. weaponry as openly hostile.
Comments to the Russian envoy came after an American drone crashed near the Russian border. Russia's defense ministry earlier said it scrambled its fighter jets following the detection of the UAV, but denied causing it to crash. Is that drone crash due to sharp maneuvering? A claim the U.S. rejects. The Pentagon says that the MQ-9 surveillance drone was struck by a Russian fighter jet. Washington says the unmanned aircraft was conducting routine operations in international airspace. It was the first direct encounter between the two powers since beginning of the war in Ukraine in February of last year. Spokesman of the LaRouche organization, Harley Schlanger, has commented on the recent U.S. drone crash and the importance of ending the Russia-Ukraine war.
I think the important point here is to understand what the purpose of this drone is. It's doing reconnaissance for targeting by Ukrainian weapons. That is the HIMARS system, which the U.S. has given to Ukraine. So this, in a sense, the U.S. is actively a party to this war right now. And the idea that this is somehow a cause for the U.S. to condemn Russia is absurd. The United States is spending billions of dollars to provide weapons for the purpose of weakening the Russian military and hopefully, from the U.S. standpoint, to cause regime change in Russia. So the use of these drones, it's not routine surveillance. What is that? They're surveying the military battlefield. They're looking at potential targets that they're making available to Ukrainian soldiers using Western missiles. So this is an escalation. I think the Russians are trying to make the point that you'd better stay out of this. And this is also why negotiation and an end to this war is so necessary, because accidents do happen, and the potential for a direct U.S.-Russian confrontation will get worse as this confrontation over Ukraine continues.
Palestinians from the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and Al-Quds took to the streets in support of Palestinian prisoners in their struggle against Israeli repressive measures. Oda Al-Alsi reports from Gaza.
Every Tuesday, Palestinians in Gaza hold a rally supporting the prisoners. Palestinians in the Palestinian territories and different places across the Gaza Strip took to the street at the same time in what is called marches of anger. Protesters condemned the Israeli crackdown against the prisoners and expressed support for the detainees' civil disobedience actions. Palestinian prisoners in the Israeli jails have pressed ahead for the 30th consecutive day with their civil disobedience actions, protesting the regime's repressive measures initiated by the far-right minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir. With the approaching of the fasting month of Ramadan, the prisoners' disobedience actions are expected to intensify and even culminate to an open-ended hunger strike.
Palestinian prisoners' actions include refusing to step out of a break time, wearing a mandatory brown jail uniform, undergoing the so-called daily security checkups, and chanting the word freedom from more than 4,000 prisoners at a time. The Israeli occupation fears an escalation in Ramadan, like what happened when the Palestinian resistance responded in the 2021 Al-Quds Sword operation against the Israeli violations.
The National and Islamic Forces expressed their concerns over the international silence against the Israeli human rights violations and urged the international community to immediately take action.
Today, we call on the international community to fulfill their duties and obligations and save the Palestinian prisoners. We also call on the United Nations to dismiss Israeli envoys Gilad Ardan and Danny Danon.
P. People of all walks of life expressed their commitment to the prisoners' case and condemned the Israeli repressive campaign against them. Anti-occupation slogans and pro-prisoners banners were raised during the protests. The National and Islamic Committee denounced the Israeli crackdown and said that these measures will never go unpunished by the Palestinian resistance.
These rallies across the Gaza Strip and the occupied Palestinian territories are a message to the Israeli occupation that violating the prisoners' rights is a red line for the Palestinian resistance and the Palestinian people. We will never allow the Israeli occupation to breach the prisoners' case anymore.
As the fasting month of Ramadan approaches, the Israeli regime intensifies its violations against the Palestinian prisoners. In time with other parts of the Palestinian territories, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip confirm their absolute support and readiness to defend the Palestinian prisoners. Ala al-Asib, Gaza.
As President Yoon Suk-yeol heads to Japan early Thursday, South Koreans expressed opposition to his plan to compensate victims of Japan's colonial rule. Outside the Japanese embassy, demonstrators are calling for direct compensation from the Japanese companies, just as President Yoon seeks to improve Seoul-Tokyo bilateral ties. Frank Smith has your details from the South Korean capital.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol travels to Japan Thursday for a carefully orchestrated summit meant to mend frayed ties. It's the first visit of a South Korean leader to Japan in 11 years. Those strained relations were expressed by people outside the Japanese embassy in Seoul Wednesday. The Yoon administration recently announced a deal to compensate Japan's South Korean victims with South Korean contributions. This angered many South Koreans who were further offended by President Yoon's comments on March 1st, which marks a 1919 revolt against Japan's colonial rule.
President Yoon Suk-yeol said our national sovereignty was violated by Japan because the Korean government couldn't cope with changes in world history. But we shouldn't view history like that. There's a great concern about him visiting Japan with such an attitude, given that Japanese military sexual slavery victims are still suffering right now.
Recent surveys have shown that 60% of South Koreans oppose the agreement to compensate the victims of Japan's colonial abuses. But President Yoon Suk-yeol will only serve a single five-year term. So resolving the historical conflict between the two states with a single summit appears unlikely. Despite the backlash, President Yoon plans to forge ahead, particularly in the interests of business and security, as Seoul's key ally, the U.S., is anxious to see South Korea and Japan cooperate to rein in North Korea's nuclear and missile programs and to help contain China. Frank Smith, Seoul.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the United States, a second bank, the Signature Bank of New York, has been shuttered as authorities move to protect depositors. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. All clients of Silicon Valley Bank will have access to their funds from Monday at no cost to U.S. taxpayers, federal regulators announced as a second bank was shuttered. The Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, Federal Reserve Board Chairman, Jerome Powell, and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation's Chairman, Martin Gruenberg, released a joint statement on Sunday, 12th of March, outlining what they say are decisive actions to protect the U.S. economy and strengthen public confidence in the banking system. After receiving a recommendation from the boards of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the Federal Reserve and consulting with the President, U.S. Secretary Janet Yellen approved actions enabling the FDIC to complete its resolution of Silicon Valley Bank, Santa Clara, California, in a manner that fully protects all depositors, the statement says. Depositors will have access to all of their money starting Monday, 13th of March. No losses associated with the resolution of Silicon Valley Bank will be borne by the taxpayer. A similar systemic risk exception has also been put in place for Signature Bank of New York, which was shut down on Saturday by the state chartering authority. All depositors of this institution will be made whole. As with the resolution of the Silicon Valley Bank, no losses will be borne by the taxpayer. Shareholders and certain unsecured debt holders will not be protected. Senior management has also been removed. Any losses to the deposit insurance fund to support uninsured depositors will be recovered by a special assessment on banks, as required by law. The Federal Reserve Board also said it will make additional funding available to eligible depository institutions to help assure banks have the ability to meet the needs of all their depositors. The U.S. banking system remains resilient and on a solid foundation in large part due to reforms that were made after the financial crisis that ensured better safeguards for the banking industry. These reforms, combined with today's actions, demonstrate our commitment to take the necessary steps to ensure that depositors' savings remain safe, the joint statement adds. The Silicon Valley Bank failed on Friday, 10th of March, as fearful depositors withdrew billions of dollars from the bank in a matter of hours, forcing regulators to urgently close the bank in the middle of the workday to stop the bank run. It's the second largest bank failure in U.S. history, behind the collapse of Washington Mutual at the height of the 2008 financial crisis. Silicon Valley Bank was the 16th largest bank in the United States, and its predominant clientele was technology startup companies, venture capital firms, and well-paid technology workers, as its name implies. The vast majority of the deposits at the bank were in business accounts with balances significantly above the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation's insured $250,000 limit. Its failure meant that more than $150 billion in deposits were to be locked up in receivership until the government stepped in late on Sunday. Some prominent Silicon Valley executives feared that if the government didn't step in, customers would make runs on other financial institutions. Stock prices plunged over the last few days at other banks that cater to technology companies, including the First Republic Bank and the PacWest Bank. Signature Bank specializes in providing banking services to law firms, from cash management services to escrow accounts for holding client money. Regulators in New York said the decision to close the bank came in light of market events, monitoring market trends, and collaborating closely with other state and federal regulators with the intention of protecting both consumers and the U.S. financial system. We'll be right back. The U.S. newspaper The New York Post has also covered this story. The federal government on Sunday, 12th of March, announced the failure of a second bank with deep ties to the technology industry as regulators rushed to try to stem the losses caused by last week's collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. Manhattan-based Signature Bank, a key financial institution for the cryptocurrency industry, was shut down over a similar systemic risk exception, according to a joint statement from the heads of the U.S. Treasury, Federal Reserve, and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank depositors will be made whole, but the bank's shareholders and unsecured debtors will not be protected, officials said. The U.S. Federal Reserve said it will create a new bank term funding program to offer depository institutions loans of up to 1 year, backed by U.S. Treasury securities and other assets to help the banks. The Fed said the steps they are taking will ensure that the U.S. banking system continues to perform its vital roles of protecting deposits and providing access to credit to households and businesses in a manner that promotes strong and sustainable economic growth. The California-based Silicon Valley Bank had $209 billion in assets when it failed on Friday, while Signature Bank had more than $110 billion in assets. Silicon Valley Bank was the second largest bank to collapse in U.S. history after Washington Mutual in 2008. Signature Bank was the third largest. President Biden, on Sunday, 12th of March, praised the feds for finding a prompt solution that ensures that taxpayer dollars are not put at risk. The American people and American businesses can have confidence that their bank deposits will be there when they need them, Biden said. But hedge funder Thomas Hayes of Great Hill Capital told the New York Post it only took 2 days of seeing regional banks crash to do the right thing. A technology insider added, regulators blew it badly in letting it get to this, but this was the best way to prevent contagion. A banking source in San Francisco, California, called the developments good for depositors, but it is more regulation and it moves us closer to nationalizing banking. Meanwhile, Signature Bank executives are calling wealthy clients, begging them to stay and telling them, your money is safe here, a source told The New York Post. I was ready to pull everything. Now I'm reconsidering. There's no promise anywhere else is safer, the source said. I'm still going to be pulling some money. We shouldn't have to even have that conversation. The government's extraordinary action came just hours after Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen publicly said the government wouldn't bail out Silicon Valley Bank, a favorite of technology startups, focused on climate change as well as California wineries. Appearing on CBS's Face the Nation program, Janet Yellen balked at the government rescue of the nation's 16th largest bank, as was done for hundreds of institutions back in 2008 over the subprime mortgage meltdown. During the financial crisis, there were investors and owners of systemic large banks that were bailed out, Janet Yellen said. And the reforms that have been put in place means that we're not going to do that again. Yellen also insisted that officials were concerned about depositors and are focused on trying to meet their needs. I've been working all weekend with our banking regulators to design appropriate policies to address this situation, Janet Yellen said. I can't really provide further details at this time. Yellen's subsequent statement with Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell and Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation's Chairman Martin Gruenberg said taxpayers wouldn't have to cover any of the bank's losses, an apparent reference to the Bank Term Funding Program. Customers were widely expected to make a Monday morning run on Silicon Valley Bank and potentially on many other banks and financial institutions.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, Muslim ladies. This is your program. And welcome to a new episode of Muslim Ladies. Well, in here I have Sister Zainab. Welcome, Sister.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much.
Wa alaikum assalam. It's a pleasure, always a pleasure to have you in here.
Same here.
And, well, as always, we're talking about things that are the concern of women. And right now I have this very question to ask. What are your comments on the fact that says women are the manifestation of love on earth?
Indeed, they are. Because if you have a look at men, they are always busy in their responsibilities. They don't.
Yeah.
It's not like men are without emotions.
I would say if there were no woman in this world, then there was no kindness and love either.
Wow, she is a poet now, and she put it beautifully.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's also, just the gist.
And also Iqbal puts it very, very beautifully. He says, but it's in Urdu, but I'll be providing the translation.
Yeah.
He says, the existence of women has provided color to the universe.
Wow.
In her melodies are the pathos of life's essence. In her melodies are the pathos and life's essence.
Yeah.
The essence of life that actually, you know, that color
of the
universe
of love.
Is all because of the existence of women. He further goes on and says much more about it. Yes, she is the manifestation of love. Like Prophet, peace be upon him, said, say to your women, say to your wives, in the Uhud book.
Yeah.
You know, I have my love for you. Express your love for them. Why? Because they are the center of that love. If you're actually putting, you know, we put something into something. For example, you are putting a paper on a photocopy machine and then you do a photo state. And then you also type yourself. You give an input.
Exactly,
I need 10
yeah.
copies. So if you, this is an input from from the side of men. And she would photostat it and she would not give you 2 copies of love in return. She would actually distribute this
love.
Of
course, and I would say she's like a mirror, you know. If you show her a beautiful thing, then all the beauty is going to be reflected to you.
Exactly. She's going to actually divide that love. She's going to actually distribute that love within your family in everything. You will be seeing she'll be doing everything with love now, because the input that you give to her, because the, you know, the instruction actually you give to her, she manifested that form of love in the everything, be that in her family role, doing household jobs, bringing up children, which is very important, and creating a very strong, warm relationship between you, your spouse. You know, because if you have a very strong and warm relationship, you are actually now making a safer society.
Yeah.
The more warm you have relationship in your family, the more you have expressed love to this manifestation of love, to this reflection of love, to this existence of love.
Source of love.
Yeah, you will see that reflecting, actually shining, spreading all in all the corners, and the society will be safer.
Exactly.
Because if you're not giving this love to a woman who needs it, who craves for listening to it, maybe, you know, we don't have a strong family then. And since we don't have a strong
family...
And
she'll be depressed, you know, like a flower. She's going to be blighted, you know? She's going to lose all her liveliness and cheeriness. And then if you give it to her, then she's going to be a good mother. She's going to share it with her children. And also, if she's working outside, she's going to prevail that everywhere she goes. So, and let's just finish this part with this sentence that is actually says, women are the one who, just like the way you said it, if there were no women in this world, then this world would have turned into a black and white movie. So there were no color and no vivacity in it. So let's go for a short break and then we'll be back to continue.
The
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, Manifestations of Love. We're talking about you, Muslim ladies, and Sister Zainab is helping us with that. So we should give love to this source of love in order to see her flourish.
Yeah, exactly. You can see this manifestation when you turn on some of the switches of love.
Exactly.
And if you have actually shut it down, this manifestation of love can actually turn into the disastrous form of, because they say behind every successful man is a woman.
Yeah.
But also indeed, behind every unsuccessful man is also a woman.
Behind every depressed, unsuccessful woman, there is a man.
Well, no, I did not hear that before, but yeah.
That could be.
Still, you know, see, just even no matter how much a man actually depresses a woman, still she has that love. She never stops taking care of her kids.
Yeah.
It's actually a building block kind of thing. See, if a woman is happy, now she manifests this love, she will form a strong family. So it starts from a woman. She develops a strong family, and then a strong family develops a stronger society, a safer society. Then a safer society develops a safer nation.
They all work like dominoes, you know?
Exactly. It's a domino effect. And starting from a woman, if you make her disastrous, then this domino is going to fall back on you.
You won't expect her to flourish and to be doing good and to be as good as she could have been if you have shared love with
exactly.
her.
Exactly. And it's all about value as well. Give her the value. Give her. Let her know her essence. Let her know her position. Let her know her rights. Let her know her rights. Because it said that if you...
She must feel that she's respected. Yeah, and let me tell you something, you know, it's not just the duty of a husband, you know, because this girl has been the daughter of a father. So if that father gives her that much of respect, that much of dignity, then this woman is going to be already flourished by herself.
Exactly.
When she goes to her husband's
house.
Yeah.
Taught us this in his, practically, when she would enter, he would stand up.
Exactly, yeah.
And now we can say he should have some pride. He's rahmatul lil alameen. He should have not been standing. No, he teaches the value of women. See how he is. A
so all the teachings starts from the family and also schooling, you know. The boys must be taught how to treat girls. And also girls have
to
learn how to
deal. It all comes from family.
Yeah, yeah. And all comes
boys,
from family.
Whatever way they behave in the school, again, comes from the family.
Exactly.
See, if a family member, if a woman is actually manifesting love clearly in her home, then this boy won't be bullying anyone else in the society. He won't be bullying anyone else in the school. So yeah, so she should be knowing her value. And again, if you give her, it said that if you express this love with women, if you show her dignity and value, and you actually the way we put it, if you put this enter of love, or if you give this input and she would manifest it in different forms, it said that if you give her house, she would turn it into the home.
Yeah.
If you give her raw food,
yeah,
she turns it into a delicious meal. She keeps on actually multiplying things. Whatever you give her, a very
and
small
and she's
raw
the
things.
Source of all the goodness, because she's going to be the mother and she's going to bring about the children who are going to create the society, who are going to be
generations,
mothers and fathers
generations.
Themselves.
Yeah. She's actually bringing generations. I'll tell you the continuation of the same Iqbal's lines about talking about the value of women. The dust in her hands has more value than a sparkling galaxy.
Wow.
Her uniqueness is more precious than those hidden pearls.
Wow, that's so beautiful.
Iqbal started first on the existence of women.
Mm-hmm.
Then he talked about her value. Now he again talks about something, because what we do in the society is we try to show her a position. Like, for example, if a woman is a housewife and if there's a working woman, and now you put both the women, you know, in one plate.
On a scale.
In one frame.
Yeah.
How do you look at both? Tell me honestly, how does our society look at both of them? Who is more valuable?
Unfortunately, right now, if you ask anyone, then they would tell you the woman who's working is more valuable because she's doing more of job.
She's doing more of job, but she's also earning. Yeah. But the one who's working at home, what is she earning?
Well, the happiness of her
family. She's been working from, she wakes up before everyone mm-hmm. else. She starts preparing things for you, and she's getting nothing in return.
Now, this is a very interesting point. Let's keep it in here and then go for a short break, and then we'll discuss it later. Dear listeners of IRB English Radio, this is Muslim Lady, and we're talking about this manifestations of love. And Sister Zainab read for us some very beautiful poems by Iqbal, which were actually too beautiful. And then we came to the point that right now in this modern world, in this modern cruel world, if you put two women on a scale and a single frame, and then you ask people about the value of each one, then maybe... And there is a big chance of maybe people would say that the one who's working is more valuable.
Yeah, and it's because it's a materialistic world.
Exactly.
Now.
Yeah.
We don't know, see a world outside of materialism. You know, there's everywhere with
your
materialism.
Your value is going to be counted by the amount of money you make out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, even those working at home, I'm not saying that housewife is much more valuable than that of the one who is working.
Yeah.
I'm not actually making any kind of division. But what I'm trying to say is, over here is, do not degrade anyone.
Exactly.
And you don't got to be degraded.
And it's
the
not
one
a competition,
working,
you know. Both are valuable because they are human beings. As long as they are good, obedient of
yeah,
Allah, they're valuable.
Since I'm talking about the importance of the one who is staying home, I also want to talk about the fact that the one who is working, I'm not degrading the one.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm no way degrading her. What I'm trying to say is degrade no one. Both
yeah.
are women. Both are manifestations of love. Both are actually... In fact, we also have a society wherein people would actually, on education, for example, she's not a very educated woman. Education like kind of brings you more respect. Now, again, in the following lines, Iqbal continues to say, the great poet, he goes on to say, she could not scribe Plato's philosophies, but it's from her flame rose Plato with his philosophies.
Yeah, again, so beautiful. Yeah, so that's all what we wanted to say in today's episode. The value of a woman is considered to be scaled by her characteristics, by her personality, by I have seen too much of women who, as just you said, they're uneducated. Like my grandmother, she's never been to school, but when you talk to her,
it's from her flame you rose. It's from her flame your mother rose.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
It's from her flame your coming generations are
exactly,
going to rise.
Exactly, yeah. When you talk to
wonders.
Them, you just understand that. It's not just, I don't know, money, job, or anything else that gives you dignity or a value. No, it's your personality. It's your characteristics. It's the amount of things you understand. Your perceiving ability is going to add to you. And that's all that matters. So thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. Muslim ladies, I wish happy days and nights for you. And may Allah shower you with His blessings. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Who is the lover? Allah. Who is Ar-Rahman? Allah. Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
Allah. Allah. Allahu Akbar.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah,
Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return. The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
According to data collected by the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at American universities, hate crimes in the United States have increased during 2021-2022, and many major U.S. cities saw an increase in these types of crimes. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Reuters News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. A new report by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, says the frequency of hate crimes across the United States saw a record increase throughout 2021, especially those motivated by bias against black people. The FBI said on Monday, 13th of March, that more than 10,000 instances of hate crimes were reported during that year, reflecting an 11.6% overall increase. The percentage reflected a 31% increase from 8,263 cases the previous year, while the year-on-year increase in hate crimes was the largest in more than three decades. The report added that 64.5% of victims in 2021 were targeted because of their race, ethnicity, or ancestry bias. It also noted that racist incidents targeting black people comprised the largest number of the incidents, namely some 2,233 cases. A separate analysis showed that anti-black crimes were followed in frequency by crimes committed against white people, 948 cases, Jewish people, 817 cases, and people of Asian origin, 746 cases. The agency also recorded 152 hate crimes targeting Muslims, with a total of 190 victims, which added up to about 1 in every 20,000 Muslims. The FBI's new analysis marks the first time the Bureau has been confidently reporting national hate crime trends since it transitioned to a new data collection system. Of course, uniform crime data released by the FBI in October of 2022 contained gaps because only 52% of U.S. law enforcement agencies reported full 12-month information relating to 2021. The agency said in a news release, of the 8,327 hate crime offences classified as crimes against persons in the updated 2021 dataset, 43.2% were intimidation, 35.5% were simple assault, and 20.1% were aggravated assault. FBI officials said they typically track the 130 most populous cities across 16 states to identify statistically significant trends. Of those, 96 cities were able to provide data for the new report. The nation's two largest cities, New York and Los Angeles, are now included in the hate crime analysis reported on Monday, 13th of March, while Chicago was able to provide two quarters worth of data for the report. Jonathan Greenblatt, chief executive of the Anti-Defamation League, says the report confirms that hate crimes in the United States reached record high levels in 2021. English website of Al Jazeera Television Network has also covered the same story. The Muslim and black population of the United States has increasingly been the target of Islamophobia and hate crimes in recent years, which unleashed a new era of racism and discrimination against Muslims and black people. The executive director of the Los Angeles chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, Hossam Eilush, said that Muslims and blacks continue to face the threat of targeted violence. Eilush added, they continue to be the target of hate, bullying and discrimination as a result of the stereotypes that were perpetuated by Islamophobes, white supremacists and the media in recent years. According to FBI statistics, hate crimes against Muslims skyrocketed immediately after the suspicious attacks of 11th of September 2001, and are still on an upward trend. Eilush said, the unfortunate reality is there are people and organizations that benefit from perpetuating Islamophobia, bigotry and war. Eilush noted that after the 9/11 attacks, there was a perfect storm of the American people and its government needing a common enemy. The multi-million dollar Islamophobia industry, the military-industrial complex and the growing threat of white nationalism. He added, these factors combined created a volatile environment for Muslims and anyone else perceived as the other. The unfortunate reality is that there are people and organizations that benefit from perpetuating Islamophobia, bigotry and war. Hossam Eilush further said that the statistics were not surprising considering the current volatile political climate in the United States perpetuated by former President Donald Trump during his term in office. Eilush added, Trump's presidency normalized being an anti-Muslim bigot. He made it socially acceptable to be overtly anti-Muslim and racist. According to Zahra Jamal, Associate Director of Rice University's Bonnyuk Institute for Religious Tolerance in Houston, Texas, 62% of Muslims report feeling religion-based hostility, and 45% of blacks feel disrespected by white supremacists. The website of Open Access Government has also covered the same story. Hate crimes in the United States have increased in frequency in recent years. However, legislation protecting victims across many states is limited. Hate crimes are generally defined as a crime often involving violence that is motivated by prejudice based on ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, or similar grounds. Legislation against these crimes is vital to reduce racism, extremism, and fascism against particular groups of people, as they are acts of violence or hostility directed at people because of who they are. Across the United States, numerous states have witnessed a rise of white supremacy and religious extremism, prompting the federal government to pass legislation targeted at crimes motivated by hate. However, research conducted to understand the nature of these laws across 50 states found the nation's hate crime legislation lacked definition and inclusivity of specific crimes, and some states did not have any legislation protecting victims at all. Researchers from Florida Atlantic University gathered data analysis consisting of 271 statutes looking at four themes that emerged from the data: how hate crimes have been contextualized, inconsistencies in hate crime legislation coverage, differences in court procedures in hate crime cases, and state efforts to combat hate crimes. Indiana, Mississippi, New Hampshire, and South Carolina were found to have no statutes at all, with no protection from crimes against religion, race, disability, and more. Although voting and political expression are paramount in a democracy, only Iowa and West Virginia had statutes that recognized hate crimes motivated by political affiliation. There were 37 states that protected religious locations. However, most states do not mention mosques among protected institutions, despite these religious institutions being the most frequent targets of hate crimes. While churches were the most identified religious institution among hate crime legislation, they were mentioned by name in fewer than half of U.S. states. The only state that protects all places of worship was Delaware.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.